with the quantum Hall effect, and so and today, so we'll first of all try to understand the nature of the bulk states in the Landau level in the presence of disorder, right? And this will tell us something about what happens as you transition from one quantum Hall state to the other. Okay, so at the last lecture we've established let me call it bulk and transitions between different plateaus. Okay, so in the last lecture we established that if you have sample in the quantum Hall effect regime, then the only current carrying states are living at the edge, okay, and bulk is not conducting, okay, and this occurs when the chemical potential lies between two Landau levels. Right, so let's recall that. So we had the following picture. So Landau level in the bulk could its energy could fluctuate as a function of local disorder, but then at the edge, energy always shoots up. Okay, and then let's say next Landau level does very similar thing, except it is separated by the cyclotron gap. Okay, so and. This situation, right, where all the transport happens at the edge, occurs when I put chemical potential between two Landau levels. Okay, so but today let's ask first of all, so what happens as chemical potential crosses one of the Landau levels, right? So what is questions that we would like to address are essentially what is the nature of the bulk state, right? For example, which states are localized, right? Which of them are extended? We would also like to understand so what happens as we transition from one quantum Hall state to the other, and we would like to understand longitudinal conductivity at the transition. Address these questions once again. Let's assume the approximation of smooth disorder. Okay, so which is actually turns out to be realistic often. So we would assume that the disorder is smooth. So which means that varies slowly on the scale of magnetic length, right? So if V of R is disorder potential, then so first of all, let's assume that the disorder is weak enough that it doesn't mix its different Landau levels, right? So let's assume that the potential fluctuations due to disorder are much less than the separation between the Landau levels given by the cyclotron energy. And then let's assume that dV, that the derivative, right, is much less than h omega c divided by the magnetic length. So this is the requirement of the slowly varying disorder. So in a second you will understand why this is a good limit to think about, right? So it's quite tractable. So but let me mention that in fact this assumption is not essential. Okay. So and conclusions that we would arrive at also hold for short range disorder as well. So advantage of this limit is that we can think about the motion of electrons in the quasi-classical limit. Right, so since disorder is smooth, at the last lecture we've established that electrons essentially drift along lines of constant potential. Along lines V of R equal constant. Right, so, yeah. No, this is a good question. So this is going to be the magnetic length, right? So this is the. Yeah, but thanks, yeah, because we called it the same letter, so it's important to make a distinction. But so as you recall yesterday, so we found that if we apply, let's say, constant electric field. Right, then what happens, ky or equivalently the guiding center position, right, we've established that the Landau levels get tilted, and then they acquire component of velocity which is directed along y, right? So this is the simplest illustration of this statement, right, that electrons move along the lines of constant potential. So but clearly, this would hold for any kind of disordered potential, right? So I can consider arbitrary potential which depends not just on the x coordinate but on both coordinates, okay? Such that it looks something like. Right, so let me just try to draw disorder profile. Right, so it just does some arbitrary random fluctuations, right, along both x and y directions. Okay, and then if I take some slice at a given energy, right, let's say constant potential line would be closed, and the electron states are such that electrons just drift along this orbit, okay? And then to obtain the spectrum, right, you need to essentially quantize this quasi-classical orbits. Now using this picture, right, we can understand at least qualitatively what the electron states look like at different energies, right? So let's do that. So for example, if I'm looking at the energies which are low, right? Then so let me call this E1, okay? Then you see that there are very few places, right, where random potential falls below this value. So there are very few such close trajectories with energy E1. Okay, so energy E1, right? It looks something like that. So we have. So let's plot our sample. Okay, there are very few such lakes, and clearly all such states would be localized. Okay, so you can think about this random potential configuration as some kind of landscape, right? And imagine you're filling it with water, right? Then the level to which you field it is essentially gives you the energy. Okay, so if you put very 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 little water, then there are very few lakes, right? And they're far apart from each other, so clearly these are localized states which cannot carry current. if you go to very high energies, right, you see something similar. So there are, right, you see that there is mostly water, right, and there are these rare hills, right, which you cannot cover. So this means that everything will be filled with water, right? So all of this is filled, and because of that, I also got the edge states. Okay, but in the bulk, all I get is this rare trajectories which can enclose the hills, right? So is it clear? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but now, right? Let's ask what happens as we let's say change the energy E1 and move it closer, right? Move it closer to zero. So then you would see that the snakes are becoming bigger and bigger. Okay. And clearly, right, when you cross when energy becomes zero, this tells you that exactly half of the sample is filled, right, and exactly half is empty. And this tells you that essentially the boundaries between filled and empty regions would percolate through the whole sample, right? So you would get a situation something like that, right, where you have, so let's say those regions are filled and these are empty, right? And the electrons can drift along these boundaries all the way from one end of the sample to the other. Okay. So this situation corresponds to exactly half of the Landau level being filled. Okay, so and this is when the transition from one quantum Hall state to the other happens. Okay, so you can also, right, you can ask what happens with the edge states in this picture, right, at the transition, and you would see that so there are in some regions where potential is random potential is negative and electron states are filled, you have edge states, but then they can always go into the bulk, right, and they can get from one edge of the sample to the other. Okay, so at this point there is very strong backscattering between the edges, and this is very different from the situation when you're in the quantum Hall state, right? So here electron from the edge can only get to the other edge by quantum tunneling to one of these puddles, right, and then tunneling to the other edge. So which has very very small amplitude. Okay, guys. So is this picture clear? Yeah.
When you draw these lakes, right? Mm-hmm. So does it mean that this drawing has an extra axis that we're not drawing?
Yes. Yes. Of course.
And
yeah.
Which axis?
Y. Right. X is y. I mean, I would draw it, but you know, I'm not I'm not very good at 3D drawing. Say it again.
Do the energy eigenstates depend on this current?
Yes. So you see, because so in the last lecture, right, we looked at the very very idealized situation when the random potential only depends on one coordinate. Right? Of course, in reality, random potential would depend on both coordinates, and it would be some kind of landscape, right? So there would be fluctuations when you get like a mountain, right? Sometimes you get a valley, and then we are interested in the nature of the drifting orbits, right? And we've established that electrons drift along lines of constant potential, okay? And we are interested in the nature of these drifting orbits at different energies, right? In reality, of course, so what we change in the experiment would be chemical potential or electron density, right? This lets us probe different states, right? And what this simple picture tells us is that when the energy is low, when the energy is below, when the chemical potential is below the energy of Landau level, right? So all these orbits are closed, right? They're situated far away from each other. And this essentially, once we quantize them, we'll get localized states, which cannot carry any current. And the same happens if we put the chemical potential to some high energy above, right? Above the energy of the Landau level. In between, right, as we go from one limit to the other, there must be a point where these orbits become percolating, and they can take you from essentially any place in the sample to any other place. Okay? Make sense? Good. So, yeah. So this is very simple argument, right? But it tells us a couple of things. So it tells us, first of all, right? It tells you that the transition happens occurs when chemical potential is equal to the energy of the given Landau level. Okay, so here, of course, I counted all the energies relative to the energy of the Landau level, right? So at the transition point, there are extended states in the bulk. Which form a percolating network that connects essentially all parts of the sample. Now we could try to estimate, right, what would be the longitudinal conductivity at the transition point. So in general, it's a pretty complicated problem, right? So because we should be thinking about some large network of channels, which can, when they come close together, they can scatter somehow, right? So it's a difficult problem. But what is clear from this argument that the conductivity would be finite, right? And to just estimate, we could say, okay, so let's take simplest possible scale, which would be the disorder scale. Then on average, right, if I take a small patch like that, there is just one channel which lives in this patch. Okay? And we know that the conductivity of such a channel is of the order of e squared over h. Okay, so from this we could guess that the conductivity per square in this case is of the order of e squared over h. And since this is a critical point, right, you expect this conductivity somehow to be scale independent, right? So Now, of course, if you really, really want to be more rigorous, you have to study a model of transport in such a network, right? And that can be done, and the result indeed confirms that the conductivity at the transition is of the order of E squared over H. So, from this idealized picture, we would predict the following behavior of the transport coefficients, right? So you would say that. So let me plot sigma xx and sigma xy. So let's say as I go from all Landau levels being empty to the first Landau level being filled, I know that my whole conductivity is going to change between 0 and E squared over H. Let's say this is a function of chemical potential. And this transition, what happens exactly when my chemical potential is equal to the energy of the Landau level? Okay. But the longitudinal conductivity, so we just established that at the transition is going to be of the order E squared over H as well. Okay, so this would be longitudinal conductivity. Now, of course, in order to understand the width of this peak, let's say as a function of temperature and so on, you really need to study this model of percolation, right? And the way, so I'll just give you an idea how you could approach this problem, won't go into too much detail. So you can consider the following problem. So let's tile our sample with squares, right, of some size, and let's assign some values of the random potential to this squares, right, which would correspond to the transition point. So let's say I would say that here my disorder potential is negative, here it's positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, positive, and so on, right? Then we know that there is a channel, right? Electron can drift along each boundary with a certain chirality, right? So it can only drift one way, and the direction of the drift is set by the value of the magnetic field, right? So then I get that. So let's say have a channel here. So here it should have the same chirality, right? So it should go this way. Then they can come out, right? And so on. All the action happens at these points, right? At these points where two channels come together and scatter. What you can do, you can assign some scattering matrix to each such junction. So let me denote it by this, okay? At the transition point, right, there is roughly the same probability for these electrons, right, to scatter to either of the outgoing channels. Okay, so right at the transition point, this scattering matrix should be symmetric, right? If you go slightly away, right, from the transition, then of course, you need to modify this picture, right? Because on average, you have, let's say, a little bit more regions with the positive potential, right? And then an electron coming here would have slightly higher probability of turning right than left, let's say, right? And And you can formalize all of that, right? So away from transition, S becomes asymmetric, slightly away from transition. So and this turns it into a tractable problem. So and this model is known as a Chalker-Coddington model. So it's essentially one of the main models for understanding the quantum Hall transitions. Okay, and it was studied a lot, essentially from this model you can extract the value of the conductivity of the transition, its scaling as you approach the transition, and so on. Yeah.
Aren't we describing electrons or energy eigenstates? Mm-hmm. But then how can they scatter from each other?
So you see, things are easy if we consider a situation like that. Right? So because here I have just one closed quasi-classical orbit, I can quantize it by Bohr-Sommerfeld, right? And that's all I need to know, right? I found my eigenstates. Now here at the transition point, of course it's not the case, right? I need to really these are just quasi-classical orbits, right? So electron spectrum would really depend on what happens when two of them come together, right? And that really to be fair, right? I should be solving this. I should assume that this happens, let's say, at the saddle point, and I should solve the problem. I should really solve the quantum mechanical problem, right? What happens near configurations like that, right? Find the scattering matrix microscopically, right? And then essentially I have to solve this problem in the whole sample, right? To find the energy levels, right? Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. It's decided by both, right? It's decided by both because this is just a simple model, right? Which depending on the value of the scattering matrix would describe to you transition point or either side of the transition. Right, so of course you're right that if you wanted to really solve the problem, so to say, from first principle, you should just take some random disordered potential, find the configuration of the channels, right? Find the places when they come together. But this is very hard, right? And the key idea here is that if you're talking about some kind of phase transition, right, things become universal, right? So. And this is a good thing, right? So this means that I can take a simplified model which shows a phase transition, and most likely, let's say, critical properties would be universal, right? So I can extract critical properties from some simplified model. So and this is a general philosophy when you're talking about phase transitions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is just to give you a glimpse of how one could approach this problem. But let me just summarize this picture. Right. So just to summary of which emerges from this quasi-classical picture. Right, so it tells us that states at the so Okay, let me actually start slightly differently. So if we plot now the density of states in a given Landau level, right? So when Landau level, when the system is clean, the Landau levels are flat, right? Now disorder broadens them because clearly clearly disorder can induce states at either lower or higher energies, right? So disorder broadens a given Landau level, and we've established that that the states at the edges of this broadened band become localized, right? So these states are localized, but in the middle there must be an extended state. And this is this corresponds to this energy when the states become percolating, right? And the quantum Hall transition happens as the chemical potential crosses this extended state. And this picture can also tell us what happens with the quantum Hall edge state, right? So as we cross this extended state, it can essentially hybridize with the edge state, right? And that's how it can hybridize the edge states at the opposite edges of the sample, and that's how they would disappear, right? As you go through the quantum Hall plateau transition. Okay, so this is the qualitative picture that we arrived at. So do you guys have any questions up to this point? So, okay, if it makes sense, let's go on. So, let me now tell you about a different way of looking at this problem, right? Which turns out to be very fruitful and it's very general, so it can be extended, for example, to the fractional quantum Hall states. This will also you'll see that we can use this approach to also arrive at the same conclusions about quantum Hall edge states and the existence of the extended states in the bulk. Right, so let me call this approach flux insertion, and in a second you will see why I'm calling it that. So let's consider a situation when a chemical potential lies between two Landau levels. Let me try to use the gauge invariants, okay, to predict what the Hall conductivity would be. So first of all, let me consider slightly unusual geometry. So let me consider a sample which has a shape of a cylinder. Okay, so it would be if I take one of the samples I considered, right, and roll it in the y direction. And let's say circumference of the cylinder is L. Then spectrum of the Landau levels would be quite similar, right, except now because it's a finite system, momentum along ky must be quantized. So ky can take values which are integer times 2 pi over the circumference. Now, what I can do, right? I can imagine piercing a flux of magnetic field through the cylinder. So philosophy is the following, right? So I can flux, if I insert flux adiabatically, right? This in a time dependent manner, it would generate a time dependent electric field in the y direction. Okay. Then I can study the Hall conductivity by looking at the charge transfer along the cylinder. Right. So this is why we want to consider this flux insertion. Now, if I insert some flux delta phi, I know that what I could do, right? I could view this flux as just giving some extra phase, right? So which means that the flux actually alters the boundary conditions for my wave functions, right? So without flux, boundary condition in the y direction would be psi of L equals psi of zero, but with flux delta phi, I know that going around this loop, an electron must pick up a phase which is phase delta phi little, which is delta phi divided by the flux quantum. Okay, so this alters my boundary condition, right? So when you go around the loop, wave function does not come back to itself, right? But it has to pick up a phase. So that which you can see from the Schrödinger equation, right? So psi of L becomes e to the I phi delta phi I delta phi psi of zero. So it's no big deal, right? So what it's gonna do? It will change our quantization condition. So now if I search for the solution, solutions are proportional to e to the I k yy, right? So I'll get the condition that e to the iky l plus I delta phi should be zero, should be one, sorry. Okay, so this tells me that kyl, let me call it ky prime plus delta phi should be equal to 2 pi n. Okay, so which tells me that ky prime is just 2 pi n over L minus delta phi over L. So I guess, so yes, so delta phi is, so this is just ky without any flux minus the phase over L. So if I now let me plot the allowed values of ky, right? So I have initially I had some values which go as 2 pi n 2 pi over L, 4 pi over L, and so on, right? 2 pi n over L. Right, this is without flux, and what flux does, it just shifts all of these values slightly, right? By the amount which is delta phi over L. Now, interesting feature here is that if you insert exactly one flux quantum, you see that the spectrum comes back to itself, right? So because essentially flux quantum gives you the same boundary condition, so you can just gauge it away, right? So effectively your system becomes the same if you apply just a single flux quantum. But you can see that there is some flow of levels, right? So if you change the flux from zero to a single flux quantum, levels come back to itself, but they flow, right? And we can use this fact to immediately obtain the whole conductivity. So now let's consider the following thought experiment. So let's insert let's adiabatically insert a flux quantum. And let's consider a situation now the physical situation when we have a field Landau level. So what does it mean? So let me plot the field states, right? So again, let me plot them as a function of ky as usual, right? So I have some quantized values of the momentum, which sit in the sample, right? So given by the condition that ky magnetic length squared must be greater than zero and less than the length of the sample in the x direction. But now and these states are filled, okay? Because my Landau level is filled. As I insert the flux quantum, these levels adiabatically transform and flow, right? So we've agreed that they flow in this direction. But now it's not just the flow of levels, right? Really the electrons move in the momentum space, right? So really, each of these electrons moved, right, changed its momentum by one. So I get an interesting situation, right? So in the bulk of the sample, nothing changed. I'm still feeling all the states below chemical potential, right? But clearly, one electron moved from one edge of the sample to the other, right? So, sorry, this picture is messy. Let me try to make it a bit more tidy. So I started with the electrons sitting in their states given by the quantized values of momentum, and then as I'm inserting flux, they've shifted. They start shifting, right? And then once I've inserted a flux quantum, what happened? They shifted by one exactly, right? So this one ended up here, this one ended up here, this one ended up here, and so on. Okay, and you see this is really, right, this corresponds to a transfer of single electron per inserted flux quantum. And of course, now we can easily use it to show that the whole conductivity is this chord over H. So this is because, so when I've inserted a flux, time-dependent flux of the magnetic field, it means I've generated circular electric field, right? So which is E equal 1 over CL d phi dt, right? This is my time-dependent electric field generated along Y. And total charge transfer, if I take the current density and integrate it over time, I know that I've transferred one electron. But on the other hand, I could say that G is equal to sigma xy times electric field. Okay, So from this I get that integral sigma xy times L times E times dt equals to E. Okay? But this integral of the electric field gives me exactly the inserted flux. Okay, so from which I get that sigma xy is given by sigma xy times flux quantum divided by speed of light is just E. And this, once I take into account that phi naught is hc over E, I get exactly that sigma xy is E squared over h. Okay, so you see this is a very simple gauge argument, which also tells us that the whole conductivity must be quantized, and it also tells us that there must be gapless states at the edges. Okay, because I've done everything adiabatically, so I know I cannot excite anything in the bulk because we've agreed that the Landau level is filled, right, and the excitations are separated by some gap of the order of the cyclotron gap. But yet, right, I transfer charged. So I took some states from here, and put it to the other edge. Right, so this is, in such a adiabatic process, it's only possible if the states are gapless. Right, so from this simple argument, we got right away that there must be gapless edge states. You can push it even further, and you can use this argument to prove that there must be an extended state somewhere in the middle of the Landau level. So to do that, let me slightly complicate this thought experiment. So let me consider a cylinder which is non-uniform. Let me consider a cylinder which has a clean region here, and a clean region here, and the disordered region in the middle. Okay? So when I do my flux insertion, right, I know that I still transferred one charge from, let's say, this edge to this edge. Right? But since here everything is gapped, right, it should be I should transfer this charge if I plot my Landau level, right? So here is disordered. So I should transfer it somehow within the Landau level. Right? So it tells you that disordered Landau level can bring charge from this side to this side. And this will only change, right, if you close the gap and if you start having some gapless excitations in this region. Okay. So this again tells us that even if Landau level is disordered, as long as the gap to the next Landau level is intact, there is an extended state somewhere in the middle. So this again confirms this picture that we've arrived at earlier. And so, and this is in general very, very beautiful and general argument. And we'll see that you can generalize it to, let's say, consider fractional quantum Hall states and show that there the whole conductivity is quantized at fractional values of V squared over H. No, no, just whole cylinder, yeah.
But you need the magnetic field, I mean, for the argument that KY is connected to LX.
Yeah.
So to L. Field, which is perpendicular to the surface of the.
Yes. So here what I did, yes. So here we have two magnetic fields, right? So we've started from our sample, which is like that, and magnetic field is perpendicular to it, and then I just rolled it up like that, right? So there is still, you can imagine that there is a line of monopoles of magnetic field, right, which create circularly.
Yeah, you would need that line of monopoles.
Yes. And then I'm inserting a flux like this, right, so that I can induce electric field and study this charge transfer. Mm-hmm. So, guys, any other question about this?
So, you used KY again, but if we have a potential that varies in both X and Y, can we still use KY to MPI?
If you have disorder potential.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, this is a very good point. So, this is a key point, actually. So, of course not, right? But I can, that's why I've introduced this clean region, right? So here I can still label states by KY. So I know that one electron moved from here to here, right? And then one electron moves from here to here, right? Because here and here KY is well defined. But now, if this region is gapped, because we've agreed, right, that we are sitting, chemical potential is sitting somewhere here, such that in this region I don't have any gapless excitations, right? To put a state here, you need to pay energy of order h omega c, right? So this tells me that charge came from here to here, for sure, and from here to here, but charge is not allowed to get stuck here. So which tells you that this charge also made it to the other side, right? And it actually, in fact, it made it all the way across. So this is why this argument is, even though it's very simple, it's quite non-trivial, because as you said, right, this is a difficulty. When you introduce disorder, states cannot be labeled by the momentum anymore, and then it's not clear what to do, right? But this shows you that gap implies extended state, right, somewhere in the Landau level. You guys, any other question about this? Okay, so if not, let's continue. So we have about 5 more minutes. So you see that this is a very unusual system, right? And clearly, quantum Hall effect is a very robust phenomenon, right? Which survives disorder, right? So there are this chiral edge states, right? Which are very robust, right? Which cannot backscatter, right? So clearly there must be some deeper reason, right? For the robustness of this phenomenon, and this reason is in fact topology of the eigenstates. Okay, so next we are gonna study the topology of the eigenstates, and in fact we will show that the whole conductivity is given by some topological invariant that characterizes the structure of the states in the energy band. So this is when we will make a connection again to the Beres phases and Beres curvature. Okay, so whole conductivity as a topological invariant. Turns out that the whole conductivity is a topological invariant for either the case of a 2D electron gas with external magnetic field, or you know more generally it's topological invariant for any kind of two-dimensional band structure. Right. So let me start with the start by just considering some kind of 2D band structure. Without even specifying that this is a Landau level, right? So I'm going to view it more generally and just consider some block band. And I'm gonna calculate the whole conductivity of a completely filled Bloch band. So let's calculate the whole conductivity. So we are gonna do it as follows. So we are gonna consider a particle, right? And we'll apply electric field. So let's say if this is my right, so I have my Brillouin zone. Let me assume that it's rectangular, and let me take a particle and let me apply, let's say, electric field along x. And let me find the average velocity of this state. And we will see that in addition to the standard component of velocity, which is the derivative of the energy with respect to momentum, there is also an extra contribution which comes from the Beres curvature. Okay? So let's understand where it comes from. So first of all, and let me call the wave function of the nth Bloch band psi n, and it would be dependent on the k vector. So first of all, clearly under the influence of the electric field, the particle is going to move, right, at some finite rate, and this would give rise to, this would slightly mix different bands, right, and the wave function I can just find it in the first order of the time dependent perturbation theory. So quite generally, I can say that that my wave function is given by, so it would be psi n, right? This is band which I am mostly in, and then there would be a small correction due to the mixture of the higher bands. Right, so this is just a standard perturbation theory, here so far I've related this correction to the rate, right, at which I am moving in the band. Okay, so you see, first of all, you know, reality check is that if you move adiabatically, if you move very slowly, right, this is going to be very small, and this term you can forget about this term, right? Then this will tell you that you're just staying in the nth band. Now, to obtain the average velocity at a given value of the wave vector, what I need to do, right? So it's just I need to just take the average of the velocity operator, which is given by the partial derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the quasi-momentum over this state, right? Averaging occurs over this state. And then I can just, you know, simply take this matrix element. So there would be first term, right, would give rise to the standard contribution, which is partial derivative of the energy of the nth band with respect to the momentum, but the second term would also matter, right? So you would get taking this this matrix element, right? I'll get the following contribution. So dH over dQ, un prime. Psi, d psi n prime d psi n over dt, okay, over epsilon n minus epsilon n prime minus complex conjugate. Right, because the whole thing must be real, so that's why here I must subtract complex conjugate. So here I just took into account the term which comes, let's say, when I take as a ket vector, I take this one, as a bra, I take this one, right? Or vice versa. And this is the lowest order correction in the derivative in time. Okay. So now let me simplify this expression a little bit. So first of all, I can use the following equality, so which is just a simple quantum mechanical fact over k psi n prime, right? So I could rewrite it as psi n commutator 1 over h d dk h minus h d over h dk cn prime, right? And then using this using this, I can just say that, okay, so now I can rewrite this matrix element as epsilon n minus epsilon n prime d psi n over h dk psi n prime. And then I'll just plug this back in that big expression, and you would find that after you simplify it, you arrive at the following expression. So you find that Vn of k is just the standard term, right? D epsilon n over h dk minus d psi n over dk d psi over dt minus d psi over dt d psi dk. Okay, and as a next step, so let me just, so this is psi n, psi n, psi n. So everything now expresses in terms of the wave functions in one band and in terms of how they change as you vary, vary momentum. Now, let's recall that the change, that this time derivative, it's due to the fact that I've applied electric field and the momentum is varying at a constant rate, right? So k dot is simply E times electric field. So from this, right, I can say that d psi dt, d psi n dt is going to be d psi dk times the electric field. And then plugging it in here, I would get that the velocity is given by the standard term h dk. And I'll get this addition, which I can write in the following form. So it's going to be just times the Berry curvature, which I introduced earlier, right? So Berry curvature is just, right, so omega of k is just d psi n, let's say dkx, right, d psi n over dky minus the same but with exchange kx and ky. Okay, so this is a, you know, remarkable result, right? So we've shown that that Berry curvature acts effectively like a magnetic field, right? So it would give you an anomalous contribution to velocity, right? Which essentially bends, right? Shows you that the particle would have a component of velocity which is perpendicular to the electric field, right? So Berry curvature is like magnetic field, using this formula, at the next lecture we'll show that the whole conductivity of a field band is in fact a topological invariant, the first Chern number of the Bloch band, this Chern number must be integer for reasons of topology, this would tell us that the whole conductivity of an insulator is always quantized at some integer number in the units of V squared over H. Okay, so let's stop here. So if you have any questions, please ask.